Welcome back to the Grey Lodge. I'm your host, Isaac Weisop. Today on Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture, we're going to talk about Season 2, Episode 2 of Twin Peaks. The episode is called Coma, and the owls are definitely not what they seem. I've got my apropos Himalayan salt lamp on and popping today. Very fitting for what we're going to talk about today, because we're going to hit on Helena Blavatsky and her theosophy. Now, she was over there in Tibet channeling the Mahatmas. And the whole purpose was to seek to have humanity understand and evolve and join the Great White Brotherhood, the Great White Lodge. So we're going to touch on that subject today. We also get our first sighting of the creamed corn on this episode. We've got lots more on donut symbolism. The donuts aren't in Twin Peaks. The donuts are not what they seem. The donuts are in Twin Peaks. They're not just a silly prop. We're going to go back into that today. And we're going to talk about one of my favorite scenes in all of Twin Peaks. Might be your least favorite scene, starring James, Maddie, and Donna. We're going to talk about it today. So, gather around, folks. We're in the Grey Lodge. And this episode starts out with a classic Albert Rosenfield and Dale Cooper dialogue. And I'm going to play the whole thing for you. Sorry, not sorry. I mean, we're starting out with a long clip. It's great, though. It's classic Albert Rosenfield. Albert makes a joke or two. We're all going to enjoy it, just like Dale Cooper did. And this is where the last episode I joked about how he calls the old butler guy Senior Drool Cup. So we're going to hear that joke. But we're hearing Albert lay the foundations for a guy named Wyndham Earl, all right? Which is going to set up the plot for a lot of Season 2, a controversial shifting of gears for the Twin Peaks world. But take a listen to the clip.
Buddhist tradition first came to the land of snow in the 5th century A.D., The first Tibetan king to be touched by the Dharma was King Hathathel Rignan Butsan. He and succeeding kings were collectively known as the Happy Generations. Now, some historians place them in a water snake year, 213 AD. Others in the year of a water ox, 173 AD. Amazing, isn't it? The Happy Generations.
Agent Cooper, I am thrilled to pieces that the Dharma came to King Ho-Ho-Ho. I really am, but right now I'm trying hard to focus on the more immediate problems of our own century right here in Twin Peaks.
Albert? You'd be surprised at the connections between the two.
Color me amazed.
Ronette Pulaski has woken from her coma.
And?
I'm thinking she's going to have quite a story to tell when she regains the ability to speak.
So she's not talking?
Awakened but silent. Probably shock. I'm going to show her the sketches of Leo Johnson and Bob, the man Sarah Palmer saw in her vision, the man who came to me in my dream.
Has anyone seen Bob on Earth in the last few weeks?
No, not yet.
Okay. I performed the autopsy on Jacques Renault. Stomach contents revealed. Let's see. Beer cans, a Maryland license plate, half a bicycle tire, a goat, and a small wooden puppet. Goes by the name of Pinocchio.
You're making a joke.
I like to think of myself as one of the happy generations. And by the way, the fat boy wasn't strangled. Killer snuffed him with a pillow. He was wearing gloves. Tape used to bind his wrist was stolen from the hospital supply closet, and that is it. If Jacques has any secrets, he'll be taking them underground.
What about the mill?
Well, preliminary suggest arson. I nominate Leo Johnson.
We'll have to get a statement from Shelley Johnson.
Hospital says she's well enough. How do you feel?
Me?
I believe it's customary to ask after the health of one recently plugged three times.
Thanks for asking.
Don't get sentimental.
Who shot me, Albert?
My men are interrogating the hotel guests, the usual bumper crop of rural know-nothings and drunken fly fishermen. Nothing so far. Oh, the world's most decrepit room service waiter remembers nothing out of the ordinary about the night in question. No surprise there. Senor Drool Cup has, shall we say, a mind that wanders.
Albert, my ring is gone. Day here, the next day gone.
So,
I'm glad you're with us, Albert. We need the very best.
Dedication to duty wasn't the only thing that brought me back here, Cooper.
What else?
Wyndham Earle.
Agent Earle. He's retired.
Yeah, to a nice comfy chair, complete with wrist restraints at the local Laughing Academy.
What happened?
Nobody knows. Your former partner flew the coop. He escaped. Vanished into thin air.
That's not good.
So Cooper and Albert, they're, of course, having breakfast at the Great Northern, and Cooper is explaining to Albert the history of Buddhism and the Happy Generations. Cooper says there's a connection here of what's going on with Twin Peaks with Buddhism. That's a big clue. Of course, that's what's going on. Cooper shows Albert that his ring is missing. Albert says, hey, Agent Wyndham Earle, who's Cooper's former partner, is actually brought him back to Twin Peaks. He's apparently escaped and vanished into thin air from an insane asylum. And we also hear that Ronette Pulaski, she is awakened but silent from her traumatic experience. Cooper wants to talk to her because he wants to know if Ronette has seen Bob. Because at this point in the story, Bob is just a figment of Cooper's imagination and his dreams. That's why Albert makes the joke and mocks him. If anyone's seen Bob yet. And of course, you know, Cooper mentions that his ring is gone. This is the ring that the giant took from him in season two, episode one. I think I have a typo in my notes here. That was the last episode. And said he'd return this ring to Cooper after he solves the murder of Laura Palmer. And I think the purpose for this to be mentioned in this scene is to show us that the dream world of Cooper is in fact manifesting in reality. You know, Albert jokes about, oh, has anyone seen this Bob character beside your dreams? And that's kind of a play on it. He says, look, I'm missing a ring. But he can't explain all this to Albert because Albert's just going to make fun of him. Now, you heard talk about the Happy Generations. This is more of the Tibetan history being laid upon the viewer. A recurring theme because Lynch is obviously very much into this. Tibet, Transcendental Meditation, the supernatural seedies, the superpowers one can allegedly manifest if they evolve and enlighten themselves enough. They have the concept called rainbow bodies even in Tibetan Buddhism, where you can evolve and enlighten yourself to the point of shrinking yourself, and you know, it's crazy. If you look it up, these Tibetan Buddha masters or whatever you call them, they stop eating and drinking and they shrink down to the side, like they could fit them in a little cooler. It's wild. But there's a lot of supernatural elements going on here. And the CDs are, in fact, the superpowers imbued in our protagonist, FBI Special Agent Dale Cooper. Because in Twin Peaks, it's part of a larger cosmic battle between the White Lodge of good and the Black Lodge of evil, as you will find out. And Tibet is where a lot of occultists, Aleister Crowley, Helena Blavatsky, claim there is this repository of ancient knowledge where man can unlock these CDs. And this ancient knowledge reveals the true nature of reality. You know, Blavatsky wrote The Secret Doctrine after allegedly spending years in Tibet, and she had channeled information communicating with the Mahatmas, Masters Morya and Kuthumi. These were the ascended masters of Tibet. They had astral bodies, and she allegedly made contact with them. And she said, these beings are not... they're not gods, but instead they're highly evolved beings. And they have the goal of assisting humanity, and that was Blavatsky's whole idea with theosophy, of evolving mankind so that we could all join in the Great White Brotherhood. So moving on, Donna is delivering the Meals on Wheels and she delivers, you know, that was Laura's old job. She would take the meals from, I believe the Double R Diner is what you see in Fire Walk With Me, and deliver them. And so Donna's trying to do a little intel, because she picked up on a clue about the Meals on Wheels. So she does this. You know, this is the universe guiding her along in a way. Again, cosmic battle. So Donna's delivering the meals to an elderly woman named Mrs. Tremont and this boy named Pierre. And the boy snaps his fingers. And all of a sudden, Mrs. Tremont, she sees creamed corn on her plate. Even though she requested no creamed corn. And then she tells Donna, she's like, "Do you see the creamed corn? I said no creamed corn." Donna's like, "What?" She looks at the plate, and next thing you know, the creamed corn leaves the plate, and it's now in the hands of Pierre. And she tells Donna, "My grandson, Pierre, he's studying magic." All right? There's a lot to unpack here. A very strange scene. Well, creamed corn, as you're going to find out later, you're going to find out it plays a role in Twin Peaks. I know, I hate teasing. We constantly are saying, well, later, later, later. But, I mean, that's the genius and the insanity of Twin Peaks and David Lynch. They're just planting tons and tons of seeds. Some of them bear fruit later. Some of them do go nowhere. Well, creamed corn goes somewhere, I promise you that. And this Tremont, this bloodline is also important to the Twin Peaks storyline. And, you know, I'm just pointing out what you need to know to pay attention to if you're new to the show. Because it just seems like a bunch of nonsense when you're watching it for the first time. And we're going to get deeper into these topics at some point. Unfortunately, it might not be till the very end. Because, you know, it takes away all the fun if I tell you what's going on. And in fact, I believe Fire Walk With Me is where we learn the true nature of the creamed corn. So, but Mrs. Tremond tells Donna, "Hey, you should talk to my neighbor about Laura. You know, that's Mr. Harold Smith." And this, you know, it has a lot of it's giving Castlevania 2 vibes, right? This whole thing. Remember Castlevania 2, Simon's Quest, where you would walk around and talk to different villagers, and they would say, "You should go check out this next," you know. It's kind of like a guiding people on their personal legend, their alchemical journey, like in The Alchemist. Now, fun fact, Pierre is actually David Lynch's son, if you couldn't tell by his absolutely identical appearance to David Lynch. He's just like a little mini David Lynch. So Cooper and Sheriff Truman, they head to Calhoun Memorial Hospital. Take note of the symbol, the logo of the Calhoun Memorial Hospital. It's an interesting, it's given Vitruvian Man vibes. Well, there's actually a very insane connection we're going to make with that again much later. But they go to the Calhoun Memorial Hospital to visit Ronette. And they're struggling to adjust their seats in her room for what feels like 10 minutes. It's actually kind of funny when you, the second time through. The first time through, you're just frustrated. You're like, just set the seat up, dude. But they adjust the seats. They finally get them adjusted. And they're showing Ronette the sketch of Bob. And she has major reaction. Oh, boy. Something's going on there. Meanwhile, the Horn brothers, they're debating about the two sawmill ledgers and a smoked cheese pig. You know, because Jerry's always got some weird food fetish going on. This time it's a cheese pig. And they're debating. They're saying, "Look, we got a real." Because remember, they cooked the books on the sawmill. You had the real ledger shows how the sawmill was in fact going bankrupt, but then you got this fake public ledger that shows it's profitable. And they debate on, you know, how they can buy the mill. They want to buy the mill for the cheapest they can because they want to tear down and build on the land, I believe is the idea. But Catherine's dead now, they think, so they're not sure which to burn, so they decide they're going to toast marshmallows instead. Major Briggs and the log lady, they've got lunch at the Double R Diner. And we hear that, because she asks him about his ribbons, and he lays it on her about how pride obscures achievement. This guy's very enlightened. He seems like he's part of the Great White Lodge, the Great White Brotherhood of Evolved Mahatmas. And she tells him that her log has something to tell him. And the log says, deliver the message. And Briggs actually understands what the log is telling him. And this is very interesting because Briggs knows the history of the woods and does a lot of work out in the woods. And so does the log lady. And the log she carries around is obviously part of the woods, and it's part of this esoteric journey that has a much higher purpose than just solving the murder case of Laura Palmer. Meanwhile, back at the sheriff's department, we find out Andy is sterile, and he's confused. How could Lucy be pregnant? Oh my goodness. Well, Andy, I got bad news for you, buddy. There's only one way that could have happened. Hank comes by to sign in for his probation. He's got beef with Truman. This goes back to high school. Hank was even a bookhouse boy once. He threw a football game in high school, and it caused a whole bunch of problems. Ben Horn reports to Sheriff Truman that Audrey's been missing for 2 days. He finally gets around to making that call. And, you know, Del Cooper, he's got that daddy energy, boy. He's way more concerned than Ben Horn, her own father. So the Horn brothers, they're meeting up in Ben's office at the Great Northern, trying to discuss how to keep this deal with the Icelanders going. Because the sawmill burned down, that's a new monkey wrench in the deal. Leland shows up, sees the police sketch of this wanted third man, Bob, and says how he grew up next door to this guy. He knows that guy. He recognizes it. And it was at his grandfather's summer house at Pearl Lakes. And then he heads out in a panic. Something's going on there. So now Ronette's been tripping on it. Leland's been tripping on it. Who is this mystery third guy? Dr. Hayward is talking to Shelley about the status of Leo. Leo's in some level of vegetative state, and it's going to take some time to figure out if this is permanent or not. And later, Bobby will have to plan to collect disability checks for Leo as long as they are taking care of him in his vegetative state. They think they can collect $5,000 a month just by taking care of him. He says, but look, we can just put him in the corner and hang donuts from his ears. Now, recall the curious idea of donuts we discussed in the season one, episode one episode. We discussed Lynch's project called Ronnie Rocket and how that included a detective visiting this place called the Circle Club. And he is told that things keep going round and round and life is a donut. That's the meaning of the Circle Club, which is referencing the Wheel of Karma and Rebirth. We got that straight from Lynch's bio, Room to Dream. And recall how strange it was when we did the episode talking about the cast and crew. The guy who plays Pete Martell, Jack Nance, who was also in Eraserhead, longtime collaborator with David Lynch, who was also in Blue Velvet, he actually died at Winchell's Donut Shop, completing the revolution of his Wheel of Rebirth and apparently restarting it. Very strange. And I've read the trying to understand the Wheel of Karma, and the idea that I believe I captured is that everything we think or do creates impressions in our minds, and they call these the samskaras. this is, in my interpretation, the computer program. And then we repeat this code that we've imprinted, which reinforces and strengthens the samskaras. It strengthens the computer coding of our mind. And this cycle is the wheel of karma, or the karma chakra. Chakra, not meaning the energy points of the bodies, but the means round, the karma circle. And this karma circle, it sets a wheel in motion, and it just keeps revolving. Thoughts create action, which creates impressions, or the samskaras. And then we subliminally seek to reinforce these impressions, and that's how you end up with a habit, or worse, an addiction. It sort of creates a groove, or creates a computer program that executes routinely. And the circle is also depicted as the Ouroboros, the snake eating its own tail. Meanwhile, up at One-Eyed Jack's, Emery tells Audrey that Ben Horn, her father, in fact owns One-Eyed Jack's. Even though I thought we already knew this, but hey, he's reinforcing the theory that Ben Horn, her father, owns One-Eyed Jack's. He owns this whorehouse. And that Laura worked there once. But she ended up being on drugs, so they got her thrown out. And Emery confirms that her father, Ben, also entertains all the girls that get recruited from the perfume counter. So Emery also confirms he's the recruiter for this prostitution ring. Meanwhile, Cooper is in his room, and he dictates to Diane that he's heard about Wyndham Earl being on the loose. Then we get a knock on the door. Who's our visitor? Well, it's Major Briggs. And just like the log told him to do, he's here to deliver a message. Take a listen.
Diane, I received some very bad news today. Wyndham Earl has vanished. The disappearance of my former partner is extremely troubling. I also learned that Audrey Horn is missing. Audrey's absence touches me in ways I could not predict. I find myself thinking not of clues or of evidence, but of the content of her smile. Who is it?
It's Major Briggs, Agent Cooper.
Just a moment. Major?
May I come in?
Please.
I have a message for you.
From whom?
Now, I'm not at liberty to reveal the nature of my work. This secrecy pains me from time to time. Any bureaucracy that functions in secret inevitably lends itself to corruption. But these rules I have pledged to uphold, and I believe a pledge is sacred.
Speaking as a man and a fellow employee of the federal government, so do I.
Well, I may reveal this much. Among my many tasks is the maintenance of deep space monitors aimed at galaxies beyond our own. We routinely receive various communications, space garbage to decode and examine. They look something like this. It's radio waves and gibberish, Agent Cooper. Till Thursday night. Friday morning, to be exact.
Around the time that I was shot.
The readout took us by surprise. Row after row of gibberish, and all of a sudden, the owls are not what they seem.
Why did you bring this to me?
Because later in the morning, Cooper. Cooper. Cooper.
So we hear Major Briggs tell Cooper that his job in the military is to monitor deep space communications. He says, look, it's usually radio waves and gibberish. But around the time Cooper got shot, there was a message that said the owls are not what they seem. And then later on, it repeats the name Cooper three times. Or many times. Is it three times? I think it's only three times on the show. There's that Holy Trinity, right? Or the triangle of manifestation. Three is, you know, symbolic. But recall the giant in the first episode of season two said that this is one of the three clues. The owls are not what they seem. And notice how Cooper asked who this came from. And Briggs, who may or may not know, couldn't answer that because of the rules of his job. That's why the owls are not what they seem. We don't know yet. Now, because you probably love Twin Peaks the way that I love Twin Peaks, I'm going to play a scene that gets a lot of controversy. I'm playing it in the background. We're at the Hayward residence, and it's James playing guitar while singing to Donna and Maddie. And it's a very lovely scene. James is, he's spitting game. And Donna, and there's a lot of body language going on here. Donna catches James locking eyes with Maddie, and she's bugging out because they're all sort of in love with each other. And a lot of people don't like this scene because they hate James. But, for whatever reason, I love this scene. I think it's because there is this love triangle. And they're all sort of giving the eyes to each other. And it kind of exemplifies the duality aspect of the relationships in all of Twin Peaks. Everyone's got a side piece, right? There's love, there's lust, there's sex, and there's death, all here in Twin Peaks. Major themes, right? And I just think this scene and this song, for whatever reason, it captures a lot of that, right? But then Donna, she gets a call from Harold Smith. This is the guy who she was supposed to visit next door to the Tremonts. Only he doesn't say much, and they hang up. And while they're, tending to this, meanwhile, downstairs, Maddie, who's by herself now, gets a terrifying vision of Bob coming after her. He's climbing, he's slithering over the couch. One of the scariest scenes in Twin Peaks. Moving like a slithering snake. And you remember earlier, I believe it was in the last episode, she was staring at the carpet at Laura's home and she saw this blood. She's having lots of visions here. The veils are thinning for her. Then Cooper he's seeing all these visions replaying. He's sort of replaying it in his mind, and he hears the owls are not what they seem, and he gets a vision of Bob as an owl. All right. And immediately after he sees Bob as the owl, and I'll put that image on my Instagram at Isaac Weishaupt. Immediately after he sees Bob as the owl, we see the scene from the pilot of Sarah running down the stairs and yelling for Laura. One of the most chilling visuals and sounds from Twin Peaks. And we already talked about the significance of Sarah yelling for Laura. Laura, Laura, right? It's a creepy thing, and it keeps coming. Then finally, the episode rounds out Audrey calling Cooper, and she gets caught on the phone by Blackie and Emery. Not good, not good. Audrey's in danger. She needs that daddy energy to come help her. Ben's not doing it. Ben's worried about this deal with the Icelanders. So what's going to happen? Well, we'll find out next time. Season 2, Episode 3 is the next episode. The Man Behind the Glass. And things are going to get hot. So stay subscribed. Watch that next episode. And until next time, stay woke.